Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, greetings. This is your host, Viata, and I'm sorry we had a technical issue on the Female Solution platform. And so I switched over to Soul Purpose Healing, and I'm going to be going live on Facebook in a minute. But for now, I'm going to play some music and try and get my audios uploaded. I had 6 audios. I won't get them all uploaded, but I want to at least get Russell Brand uploaded because he is very significant in this show. The production that he put together was just amazing. So I'm going to bring in Russell Brand. Oh, okay, let me see. Got the wrong wording here. How? But welcome, welcome. We did get our joint rolling in, and now we're just going to try and get the show going with an audio about vaccines. So welcome and thank you. I'm going to try and, trying to get that, here we go. Okay. Open. Upload. Okay, we're doing it. We're doing it. We're doing it. Okay, I'm going to go live on Facebook so I can invite my friends to join me in the studio. Here we go. All right, we're live. We're live again on Facebook. And I'm going to play a little music as I invite some friends to join me. So welcome. I'm going to play some music, and then we'll get right to the show after we get our audios going. Let's see, Russell Brand. Yeah, he's here in the studio. So great. I'm going to invite some friends and groups to join me. So please be patient. I'm live on.
And yet it's not coming up on studio. Okay.
So here we go. I am live on my Facebook page.
I'll be on live or not.
All right, music, and then we'll be starting in just a minute. Let's see. Damian Escobar, we'll be right back.
Yeah.
All right, we are here in the studio of Soul Purpose Healing. I'm not sure what happened on Female Solution, other than sometimes when scheduling the timing on the page, when scheduling the timing, sometimes, let me share this to my page. I'm sharing this, 215-383-5863. I'm here in the studio. I'm sharing this to Soul Purpose Healing so we can have everybody in here. Thank you for joining me this morning. 215-383-5863 is the number. So join me, please. Share with your friends. I'm live on Soul Purpose Healing and Facebook Live, Vieta. So I'm trying to share with a few people. Sorry for the confusion, but we are live now. And as I said, as I wait for people to join me, I went to a nursing home this week to visit a friend. She was curled up in her bed, bless her heart. It's assisted living place. And she was curled up in her bed. And I've never seen her do that before. She's usually up in her chair looking out the window, and she looked just terrible. And I thought, wow, what's going on here? So I stayed for a while, talked to her. We laughed, we joked. And when I left, just the sadness about the condition of nursing homes today. It's the saddest experience. You walk in, people are sitting in their wheelchairs watching, being programmed by the television. And I thought, I surely don't want to end up like this in my senior years. And it is possible, it's very possible for you not to end up like that in your senior years, in a wheelchair, in a nursing home with no visitors coming to see you often. So I felt so sad for her, but she's led an awesome life. And her husband died a couple of years ago. So that's why she had to sell her house, and her daughter put her in an assisted living facility because her daughter lives in New Jersey, so she can't come back and forth to Florida. So I thought about how as senior citizens, we have choices, and we don't have to accept the declaration by men in the white coats and scientists and our government that says, senior, as you get older, you're going to be in pain and weak and suffering. That is not something we have to accept. I was listening to an audio that was saying just the opposite, that we have this innate ability within us to change our being, our future, by making choices. So that's what this show is about, resisting the marketing of disease and drugs. That's what they're marketing. Senior citizens should take this injection because we're old and they want to get rid of us. But that's not the goal of our creator. That's not what our creator has planned for us. We can live, we can actually get better as we age, but we have to make different choices. So I want to encourage you today, as you listen to Russell Brand talk about the vaccine, how vaccine makers cause the opiate addiction problem. I'm going to be, it's a fairly long audio, 15 minutes, but it's so full of great knowledge for you to make different choices about your future. So as I am still inviting friends, because we lost the other page, but I just want to hope that you'll listen carefully to what Russell Brand is saying. It's a lot of history and all the companies that were involved in the opiate problem. They're now involved in promoting and marketing vaccines. So that's why we're here today, to help you resist the marketing of disease and drugs, because the same companies who are marketing your savior, the injection, the vax, are the same companies that created the opiate problem. So let's listen to Russell Brand talk about this whole big pharma production of opiates that killed so many people, and now they want to promote their injections.
Did you know that the transnational global mega companies that are creating the vaccine for COVID also created the drugs that led to an opioid epidemic, killing as many people in America as have died as a result of coronavirus? Let's have a look at the opioid crisis and the pharmaceutical industry in general.
Health officials are warning of something called syndemic, two epidemics happening at once.
Of course, we know about the coronavirus pandemic, but the opioid crisis is also on track to claim an unprecedented number of lives.
A new study indicates that the opioid crisis in the U.S. is deepening, with overdoses 29% higher than before the pandemic. According to the latest research based on 190 million emergency department visits, the opioid epidemic is growing in strength and taking advantage of a society now more susceptible to addiction than ever.
The American Medical Association says at least 30 states have reported overdose deaths rising in 2020.
More than 400,000 Americans are estimated to have died during the opioid epidemic that spanned the last couple of decades. How did it start, and which transnational pharmaceutical companies participated in the creation and proliferation of the drugs that caused it?
A judge in Oklahoma ordering Johnson & Johnson to pay $572 million for aggressively marketing addictive painkillers to doctors and to patients.
Thing is, with addictive substances, you don't need to aggressively market them. Just put them down. They'll find their market.
This Oklahoma judge has decided that corporate giant Johnson & Johnson helped fuel opioid addictions in his state.
What? Johnson & Johnson? No more tears? Baby products? Good old Johnson & Johnson.
The state blamed Johnson & Johnson for misleading marketing to doctors and patients, but the state says downplayed the risks.
Johnson & Johnson were accused of a cunning, cynical, and deceitful scheme. That's the worst kind of scheme that anyone can come up with. So this cunning and cynical, deceitful scheme was to ramp up narcotic painkiller sales as one of a web of firms that created the biggest drug epidemic in American history as profits surged. The companies worked in step to change medical culture and practice by influencing doctors, researchers, federal regulators and politicians. The $572 million fine was well below what some investors and analysts feared in what had been a $17 billion lawsuit. The firm's shares rose by 5% in extended trading following the decision. So the result of that fine was the share price rose probably sufficiently to accommodate that kind of loss. So I guess what this indicates is that we're creating systems that are going to lead to malpractice. They're going to lead to negative consequences. Take the opioid crisis as an example, even though it's serious enough if it were an anomaly. It shows that the incentive for profit is so strong that it overrides all other considerations, like whether or not the drugs are so addictive that it kills people.
COVID-19 is here. It will be here for some time, but in a year or two, it's the opioid use disorder epidemic that'll still be with us.
I suppose because the opioid epidemic indicates a great deal of social dissatisfaction, breakdown of community, breakdown of mental health, loss of hope, alienation. It's a much clearer marker of the problems America faces than the pandemic, which is a peculiar anomaly. The opioid crisis, you can trace its roots, you can trace its creation not only to certain medical conditions but to social conditions, to economic conditions, to corporate conditions and the way that the culture is run.
48 states and more than 2,000 local and tribal governments have now sued drug makers.
In terms of legal consequences for these companies that are charged with such significant jobs, the Johnson & Johnson case was followed by another wave of revelations which brought into focus how other pharmaceutical firms rushed in to exploit what grew into an $8 billion a year industry, showing that a raft of corporations flooded the country with more than 75 billion opioid pills in just 6 years and targeted regions already worst hit by the epidemic. Because I suppose if you're approaching it from a marketing perspective, those areas are where there's a market rather than, oh God, there's a terrible crisis there. What is regarded as a crisis for some is an opportunity for others. And as long as that is the prevailing mentality, these kind of problems will be perpetuated.
We should point out that there are at least two other pharmaceutical companies that have settled with the state of Oklahoma for millions upon millions of dollars. All of them face multiple lawsuits across the country.
They made false claims for the safety of the drugs, not least in manipulating scientific papers to promote the spurious assertions that there was a less than 1% risk of addiction from narcotic painkillers. The manufacturers funded academic studies that hewed their way and doctor training that emphasized opioids as the default treatment for pain. When money is invested on skewing studies and papers, you create the conditions for cynicism and suspicion in other areas of medicine, because you can literally point to these events and say, well, look, when it came to the opioids, they were able to manipulate the evidence. They were able to just pay manageable fines and see their share prices surge back to values that meant it could easily be accommodated. How can we trust them? How can we trust these companies? How can we trust this mentality?
Janssen Pharmaceuticals told CBS News in a statement that the state's allegations are baseless and unsubstantiated. We acted responsibly in providing FDA-approved pain medications, the company said.
Much of the influence they asserted was done through lobbying and the funding of medical societies. The industry provides much of the FDA's income through the fees it pays for drug approvals. Therefore, the FDA is to a degree funded by the pharmaceutical companies that it's supposed to regulate, which obviously represents a conflict of interest. This is what I mean by systemic corruption.
Johnson & Johnson points out that the FDA-approved labels of these medicines provide clear information about their risks and benefits.
What's the point of having a regulatory body that doesn't regulate practices that are this nefarious? That requires significant change. Whether you have a Democratic government or a Republican government is not going to affect that entire area of political and social life. So in that regard, at least, it means that the political process is redundant or irrelevant.
Johnson & Johnson set to deliver 4 million doses of its vaccine this week.
This week, Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine was authorized by the FDA.
The FDA's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices recommending the vaccine for people 18 and older.
A report from Global Justice Now looked at the track record of 7 corporations hoping to produce vaccines. 6 of these giants made a combined revenue of $266 billion last year, with profits of $46 billion.
Johnson & Johnson is going to be a game changer.
For many of the corporations researching COVID vaccines, the virus has created an opportunity which cannot only be measured in soaring share price or anticipated profits. Rather, they're looking to the virus to rejuvenate the public image of this most unloved of business sectors. The problem is that companies that have behaved in a demonstrably irresponsible manner are now charged with solving a global pandemic. What ethics will they bring to the challenge that they're facing now? You can certainly understand why some people would have doubt and uncertainty about the agenda and objectives of Big Pharma when so palpably they are driven by profit.
Drug maker AstraZeneca teaming up with Oxford University.
Under the agreement with Oxford, the British drug giant will be responsible for development and worldwide manufacturing and distribution.
The vaccine developed by Oxford University was to be produced on a non-exclusive royalty-free basis. The director of Oxford's Jenner Institute told the media, "I personally don't believe that in a time of pandemic there should be exclusive licenses." However, the Gates Foundation pushed the University of Oxford to deliver its vaccine to a partnership with AstraZeneca. This changed the university's distribution model from an open license platform to an exclusive license controlled by AstraZeneca. That shows you that the same mentality is in play. This is not querying the efficacy of the vaccine or commenting on the pharmaceutical or medical aspect of the vaccination program, merely the ideological drives that exist in these companies, demonstrable from the outcome of court cases that have already taken place and are a matter of public record.
Imagine for a moment popping a pill before bed that costs about $13.50. Now imagine waking up the next morning to find that the price of the exact same pill jumped to $750 overnight.
Other famous cases from Pfizer in 2013, the price of an anti-epilepsy drug was increased from £2.83 per packet to 67 quid per packet. That's an extraordinary jump in price.
So far this year, drug companies have raised prices on 263 medications by an average of nearly 8%, with many patients choosing to go without.
Nearly 10,000 women filed lawsuits against Pfizer after the drug Prempro caused serious health risks and was linked to breast cancer. The claims were settled for $1 billion. GlaxoSmithKline was fined $3 billion after admitting giving kickbacks to doctors and encouraging the prescription of antidepressants to children. Apparently, doctors were taken away and given fancy holidays and stuff like that. I mean, the whole thing sounds like when you hear mad stories of like 100 years ago, corruption in developing nations. It's happening now in Anglophonic countries that claim to be at the zenith of civilized achievement.
Johnson and Johnson did not cause the opioid abuse crisis here in Oklahoma or anywhere in this country.
In the interests of balance,
right,
let's see what Johnson and Johnson say for themselves in the form of their adverts, just in case I'm being unfair and biased.
When you're the oldest baby company in the world.
That's a weird image, isn't it? I don't like to think of an old baby. Some little Benjamin bag. Hey, how can I get a little bit of that old titty milk, mama? No, you'll have this powdered milk. Makes more economic sense.
You learned something important. Babies grow up.
Not necessarily. Not if you give them enough OxyContin.
They fall down. They have fevers. They break bones.
I hate this advert. This kid's got a hell of a time, isn't it? Sit still.
Some develop acne, allergies, and nearsightedness.
Look, what you seem to be saying, Johnson & Johnson, and I get it, is you're fucked. You need Johnson & Johnson. You're going to have a fever. You're going to tumble out of a tree. You're spotty as all hell. Johnson & Johnson's your answer.
They need to be stitched up.
Oh, we've been stitched up all right.
They have ups and downs and babies of their own.
I think one of the things I most object to when it comes to the old corporate world is their willingness to mobilize beautiful, poetic, romantic, dramatic ideas in order that they may sell. All of these ideas in this advert, community, caring about children, the troubles and difficulties of puberty and adolescence, these are all real things. But continually they're trying to direct the flow of your attention and the flow of your money towards Johnson & Johnson as a solution. I mean, I suppose what it is insulting, isn't it? It's insulting they're doing that after their role in the opioid crisis. In fact, the only reason they need to make that advert is to wash away the redolence of all of our shared memories of the irresponsible way that they've promoted dangerous drugs to vulnerable people in order to make money. And this ain't what I'm saying. This is the result of court findings. These are the result of convictions. These are results of payouts that they've had to make. And again, you know, Johnson & Johnson, the people that made this advert, the people that are working in accounts, even the people, the CEOs and the people involved, all human beings like you, like me, born, live, gonna die. The systems themselves are what need to change. I suppose speaking as a drug addict, I know how I behave. I just take drugs. I just do stuff. I need alternative principles, alternative ideas to intervene with my appetites and tendencies around drugs, or I'll take drugs in an irresponsible way. Johnson & Johnson are like a drug addict living in a world where drugs are freely available and no one's mentioning that your drug addiction has consequences for yourself and others.
Sometimes they go to dark places and need help getting back.
It acts as if it's Johnson & Johnson and Jesus.
Help you back from stroke and make every chapter of your life the best it can be.
We don't mind. You can be gay, you can be old, you can be any colour you want to be. Johnson & Johnson, we will push OxyContin or some other highly charged opiate on you if we think there's a penny in it.
And from the day you're born, we never stop taking care of you.
And by care, we mean advantage. I suppose what we can learn from the opioid crisis is that a situation that was already bad, i.e. mental illness and addiction, was exacerbated by the agenda of certain transnational corporations, aided by an impotent FDA and a government unwilling to intervene in the practices of big businesses. And I suppose it's interesting that these very same companies are now charged with solving the biggest problem that the world has seen for some time in the form of this pandemic. How is it that the same companies can generate 400,000 deaths from an opioid crisis and can then be charged with resolving a crisis that has led to 500,000 deaths in America? How can you use the same mentality and the same individuals and the same organization to solve that problem? And if there is an answer to that, if that is something that can be done, at least you can be sympathetic when people have got doubts and fears, not only about the vaccine, but about the power of these organizations and the manner in which they practice. If you've got any comments, then put them there because we read them and respond to them. Also, please like this video and subscribe to it. And please subscribe to my mailing list, what I'm calling an Elite Cabal Alliance. Just sign up to it there. Also, I've got a new book coming out, Revelation. You can pre-order it. The link is there. But please sign up to the mailing list alliance. We're not sure quite what to call it, in case I ever need direct connection with you.
So that was Russell Brand, a comedian, a singer, actor. He's done a lot of things. But I thought that was a brilliant production of information about the drug companies, specifically Johnson & Johnson, who helped create the opioid crisis, and where he says 400,000 people have died, and yet we are trusting these companies to bring us the solution to the pandemic. So it's something to think about. We certainly can ask questions, and I'm waiting for a few more audios to upload about addiction, because this is what it comes down to, is that we're looking at addiction to painkillers, first of all, and the audios that I've uploaded and waiting for are about sugar addiction. Why sugar addiction today? Well, it occurred to me with this Krispy Kreme marketing campaign that just got started, that Krispy Kreme is marketing an offer of a donut a day if you get your vaccine. Is it comical to anybody but me that they're pushing another drug to get a drug? Get a drug, and then we're going to push another drug. How do we know it's a drug? When I saw that Krispy Kreme marketing campaign, it reminded me of my college days. When I was in the University of Wisconsin, we did a lot of pot smoking and partying. Let me just put it that way. Pot smoking and partying. And there were many times we had a donut factory right outside the campus where on Friday night, Saturday night, whatever, after we had been partying all night, we would go to the donut factory. I'm talking three. This donut factory was open like 24 hours a day. So we would get our fix any time of the day. But especially on Fridays and Saturdays, we would go to the donut factory and get another fix. It was crazy. You know, we've been partying and dancing and drinking and mostly smoking pot all night. And then we'd go to the donut factory. These donuts were hot off the rack. I mean, hot Krispy Kreme type donuts, only they made them fresh right there in the factory. So we'd get another boost right after partying all night. And then I don't even know if we'd go home and go to sleep because we were high on sugar then. So we're looking at now the idea that addictions are driving Americans today to do things, to make choices that the Creator says, well, perish, you're going to perish. If my people perish for lack of knowledge. So one of the audios that I'm waiting to be uploaded is a confession of an addict. And I really would like your comments on your own experience with sugar. We're all addicted to sugar. That's the reality, is we're all addicted to sugar. One of the audio, sugar is killing us. These are the audios that I was hoping to play, but they're still processing. They haven't uploaded totally. Let me see if I can rush this along. I don't think so. But they're still uploading. But some, here's the topics that I wanted to play for you. Sugar, the drug we're all on. Sugar withdrawal is like opiate withdrawal. This is from a doctor, Tracy Marks.
is a doctor, and she says sugar withdrawal is like opiate withdrawal. So, and sugar is killing us, and then how sugar affects the brain, and then confessions of a sugar addict, Laura Marquis. So it occurs to me that what we're going to see with Krispy Kreme marketing is a promotion of disease and drugs. So how many of you are ready to go get your vaccine or your injection and get your daily donut, your daily sugar dose? And donuts are one, in my journey with changing my diet and so forth, I learned in about my early 30s, when I had been out of college for like over 10 years, I realized my body was in total imbalance, totally out of balance. I had one day where I couldn't even get out of bed. I had no energy in my body. And I had been sugarholic for years and sugar addict for years. And I had had my second son, and the hormones and the sugar chemistry were just throwing me way off physically. And I couldn't even go to work. And I found a naturopathic doctor, and he gave me a diagnosis of candidiasis throughout my blood. I had candida in my bloodstream. That's how bad it was. Candida is usually located in one area of the body, but for me, it was all over my body. And this was, again, in my early 30s after years of partying and drinking and eating sugar and all the time. And that's when I woke up. I woke up because I had two young children I had to take care of. And when he told me about candida, and then I had Epstein-Barr virus. So I woke up to the reality that this sugar addiction was not good for me, and I had to change my diet. So I started looking at alternatives for sugar. Now, when you have two young boys in the house, that's all they want is sugar. In fact, I've got a grandson right now who's 4 years old, and he keeps, after dinner, even before dinner, it's, can I have a paleta? Paleta, that's Spanish for popsicle. And they've been feeding this child popsicles all his life, and he's just addicted to it now. And the reason why we know that sugar affects the brain is because we get a dopamine effect from the sugar. So that we're all walking around looking for a dopamine high or something to stimulate us, give us a little energy. And that is why we are all addicted to a substance they call sugar, which is really causing so many health problems that if we don't get it under control, we're going to end up like my friend in the assisted living place or with diabetes. And our Monday morning mindfulness host, Zelda Robinson, has a book out called, I think it's called Diabetic Donut. And she is living proof about, and I'm sure there are others who are living proof about how diabetes develops. And it's not just the food, the sugar, but it's really, I think, a food addiction. We use food to calm our emotions, to soothe our emotions, and we end up being food addicts, really. So we can look at not just the sugar, but the food in general is causing disease. And now we have drug pushers who are on the scene. So these are the things I want you to think about while we are listening to another audio. And my audios still aren't processed. They aren't uploaded yet. But the audio is Confessions of a Sugar Addict. Now this woman, Laura Marquis, who was giving a speech, a TED talk about her sugar addiction, had diabetes. She developed diabetes after her father, who had a food addiction, her father told her, I have a food addiction, and that's why I have diabetes. And he went on, and as a young girl, she remembers her dad telling her all about his disease. And then she realized, that's me. So a lot of time our parents demonstrate the habits and the addictions, and we get the same habits. It's not like it's genetic necessarily, but the habits we develop because of our parents' behavior is what causes us to have the same disease. So we're looking at today a marketing plan. Number one, Krispy Kreme. If you get your injection, we're going to give you a donut a day. Is that insane to anybody but me? It's like so bizarre that we have anybody who would even think of doing that. But I have a feeling there will be quite a few people running for the Krispy Kreme donuts because we're addicts for sugar, right? So do you have a sugar story that you'd like to confess? Can I help you tap out the sugar? I have this drink that I love that's a chocolate protein drink, and it has coconut sugar in it. And I realized if I drink that whole bottle of protein, chocolate, coconut sugar, my body will be achy the next day. Because even coconut sugar in a liquid chocolate form can be too much for a body that was addicted to sugar many, many years and had developed a sensitivity to the sugar. Some people are allergic to any kind of sugar. And so that's something we want to be aware of, because the nursing home awaits us. If you're in your senior years and you're not making better choices about what you put in your body, then you could end up in the nursing home like my friend and have very few visitors, very few family members. You know how family members are going to throw you in there and leave you alone for a while because they figure you're going to be taken care of. But the reality is it's a very lonely place to be in. And so we've got now the time to consider what are the choices we're going to make going forward on how we treat this body. And the prayer, the serenity prayer, is so appropriate for us to consider going into our senior years. Because what is going to make the difference, excuse me, of whether you end up in a nursing home or assisted living is your choices of wisdom, your choices of love and wisdom. At my age, at any age in our senior years, we've got to give up the sugar every day especially, and we have to be more conscious of eating vegetables and fruit and less meat and less alcohol. Otherwise, the body is not going to regenerate and renew and repair. Every day, this body is repairing and getting stronger and stronger if we keep this prayer in mind. I'm going to play this prayer as a reminder of what we need to be doing at any age, because the marketing is strong. The marketing is strong. And then I have some articles I'm going to read for you, some recent articles about how Dr. Fauci is predicting when this pandemic will end. And then another article that points out how they're censoring people who don't agree with the vaccine or the injection promotion marketing scheme. So let's listen to the serenity prayer for a minute and just think about the choices you have to make every day that will keep you, not only keep you out of a nursing home and an assisted living house, but will strengthen your body, repair your body, and help you be stronger in your senior years. I'm not accepting any longer the idea that I'm going to get floaters in my eyes, I'm going to go half blind, or I'm going to get weak, or my joints are going to be as I grow older. I was told early this morning, 3 o'clock this morning, I woke up, and I could hear the spirit telling me that you don't have to grow old and weak if you choose wisdom in what you put in your mind, your ears, your mouth every day going forward. And so that's where I'm really concentrating on making sure that I have in my house only those foods that were going to repair, help my body repair, be nourished and strengthened, and not those foods that are going to weaken. Because if you have sugar in the house, you're going to eat it. There's no doubt in my mind. If I have a Clif bar, for instance, Clif bar has so much sugar in it. It's supposed to be healthy sugar, organic. Sugar is sugar when it's in the form that it's in. And so I want to just play the serenity prayer at this point, that we would all be of a mind to be more meditative and prayerful of going forward as to what we need to do to stay out of a nursing home and strengthen our bodies and prepare our bodies for being grandmothers to these grandchildren who need our wisdom. So let's listen to this prayer, and then we'll come back and talk about what Fauci and so here we go.
God, grant me the serenity to accept things I cannot change, courage to change all I can, and the wisdom, yes, the wisdom, the wisdom to know the difference. God, grant me the serenity to accept, yeah, the things I cannot change, the courage to change all I can, and the wisdom, yes, the wisdom, the wisdom to know the difference.
March 26, 2021, and we've got marketing plans for our life, and the prayer says we better be looking at wisdom if we want to stay out of nursing homes, if we don't want to end up in the hospital, and so forth and so on. So I had found, saw this article early this morning that Bill Gates is predicting the date that the world will be completely back to normal. So I have to share this with you because this is a marketing plan to put us back in fear and of the idea that we need drugs to help us survive what is an invisible virus. And the odd thing about all this is that we have this invisible virus, but the visible reality is that we've had 400,000 people die from an opiate crisis that Johnson & Johnson promoted and provided the drugs and all the other Pfizer, Moderna. And yet we are afraid of an invisible virus that is really not the problem. It's more the fear and the sugar that's the problem that we do every day to weaken our immune system. But Bill Gates has predicted that the world will be completely back to normal from COVID pandemic by the end of 2022. So he wants to drag this thing out for another year, stressing people out, bringing more fear, promoting why? Because the Microsoft founder said the health crisis has been an incredible tragedy, but one bright spot has been the arrival of vaccines. Here's the marketing scheme that we've been listening to for a whole year now, that the bright spot is the vaccines are here. By the end of 2022, that we should be basically completely back to normal, Gates said in an interview for a Polish newspaper. His wife, Melinda Gates, also provided a similar timeline earlier this month when asked what she believed global and immunity could be reached against the virus, noting that the vaccines probably won't reach developing countries en masse until the end of this year. She said that it'll be sometime in 2022. So they want to keep up this production of injections, mRNA injections, till the end of next year. Whoa. And boy, I think we're all looking forward to that, says Melinda. We're all looking forward. This is smart. Remember, we want to resist the marketing. The marketing is we're all together on this. We're all looking forward to it. And I think there are a lot of people that are suffering, not just in the U.S., but everywhere. Yeah, like in Africa where you promoted your vaccines and people are dead now. The couple has given at least, here's more marketing. I'm just pointing out the marketing that we have, we need to learn how to resist. Couple has given at least $1.75 billion through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to help the global fight against coronavirus. The funds have gone to aid some vaccine makers' diagnostics as well as potential treatment. So the marketing plan, if you haven't caught on, is all about money, right? Bill Gates did not leave the Microsoft business to lose money in the vaccine business, right? This is all about making more money, not just for him, but for his companies that he's formed, and now he's buying land. And so if we don't resist this, then what's going to happen is governors and those who are in Gates' pocket, who are getting funds from Mr. Gates and his wife and their foundation. Foundation is another marketing tool. It sounds so pleasant and entrepreneurial. It sounds so, I can't remember the word for it, but it just sounds so beneficial to everybody to have a foundation, so caring. So unless we start resisting this type of information and resisting the people who are promoting it, then we will surely be caught up in the next pandemic waiting for the vaccine. And he and his wife don't even believe the mask wearing should end or the lockdown should end. They're all for locking people down and creating more psychiatric problems instead of promoting freedom. So on this next article, we're going to look at what's happening because if you don't believe that way, the marketing plan now is more anti-vaccine censorship. If you don't believe the way Bill and Melinda Gates believe, then you're going to be censored. So these articles point out that A dozen anti-vaccine accounts are responsible for 65% of disinformation shared online, a new report says. Blame, 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 blame. That's a marketing tool that's been used even in politics, right? Blame the past president. Don't take any responsibility. It's all their fault. And so now they're blaming some very powerful, in fact, quote, anti-vaxxers. And it's a report by the Center for Countering Digital Hate. There's another marketing term, a Center for Countering Digital Hate. And they found 12, quote, anti-vaxxers are responsible. Just 12, really? For almost two-thirds of anti-vaccine content circulating on social media platforms. The so-called disinformation dozen, quote, disinformation dozen remain prominent figures on platforms like Facebook and Twitter, despite repeatedly violating their terms of service, according to the center. And they go on to say, living in full view of the public on the internet are a small group of individuals. Individuals are very powerful, even collectively they're powerful, who do not have relevant medical expertise. Relevant medical expertise. That itself is a marketing phrase that puts people in a anti-mode, critical mode about what they're getting ready to share with us and have their own pockets to line who are abusing social media platforms to misrepresent the threat of COVID, misrepresent the threat and spread misinformation about the safety of vaccines. Now, some of the people who they claim are doing this, number one, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Hello. If you followed Robert F. Kennedy Jr. at all, this man is so thorough on his research. I get emails from him, and he has a website, and he is so thorough on his research. It's really hard to believe that they can even make this charge against him because he's so thorough about researching. And he was one of the few people who did research on the baseball player who recently left his body because of after having an injection. And he did a call to the coroner's office to find out why they didn't do an autopsy. And the reason they didn't do an autopsy, they said, because they didn't get the body. So Robert F. Kennedy did all the research to find out, well, why didn't they do an autopsy? And what's the deal going on with this baseball player? We know who died after getting a second injection. And so the criticism now is that Robert F. Kennedy leads an anti-vaccine group. When he has never said he was anti-vax, he always says he was for safe vaccines, which there's no such thing. Because even the Supreme Court ruled that all vaccines are inherently unsafe. And then the other one, Dr. Joseph Mercola. Now, here's a medical doctor that they're claiming has no legitimate medical, no medical foundation to stand on, that he's irrelevant medical, he's not a relevant medical expertise. And they say he has made a fortune selling dietary supplements as alternatives to vaccines. Well, some people would rather take a supplement and set lots of supplements, in fact, rather than be injected with experimental chemicals, right? But in this case, with this company, the Countering Digital Hate Foundation, they are saying that groups like, or people like Robert F. Kennedy, Joseph Mercola, and Ty and Charlene Bollinger, these two, this is a Christian couple, who has made so many documentaries. Ty and Charlene Bollinger have made at least two documentaries that I know of, The Truth About Cancer, which really got attacked, and The Truth About Vaccines. So we are in a place of marketing now against individuals who are promoting health and well-being, even though They have really done their research. So this company, and I want you to keep this name, Countering Digital Hate Company, or Center, the Center for Countering Digital Hate. This center says these are not just individuals. These are individuals who have behind them large companies that they themselves run, which pump out misinformation with the aim of persuading people not to follow the clinical guidance and to instead buy their false cures or to buy access to the information they claim is the truth about coronavirus and about vaccines. And this guy's name, who's the founder of this Center for Countering Digital Hate, is Imran Ahmed, founder and CEO. And he's been on local Pop CBS and MSNBC. And he analyzed over 812,000 Facebook and Twitter vaccine-related posts shared between February 1st and March 16th of this year. 65% of anti-vaccine posts came from one of the 12 disinformation dozen, and that also includes Dale Bigtree. If you know Dale Bigtree, Dale Bigtree hosted The Doctor Show for many years, and he's since left that show and doing his own thing on his website, because he's been banned also from social media. So many of these people have been banned from social media, and yet the marketing continues. So if you're just joining me, we're talking about resisting the marketing of disease and drugs. And this recent campaign with Krispy Kreme donuts really alerted me to the fact that people are addicted to sugar, and so they're targeting the addicts now. And I played an audio by Russell Brand. I see some people are joining, have recently joined me. I may want to play this at audio again. It's really, to me, an excellent production of the history of drug manufacturers, pharmaceutical companies promoting a drug that caused the opiate addiction, which killed over 400,000 people so far. And there continues to be a larger number of people committing suicide and just being totally consumed with taking a drug for their emotional pain. So I would love it if you want to share, someone's been listening to Russell for years, if you want to share your sugar addiction, that if you can confess that you have a sugar addiction like all of us, and what are you doing about it? I'm trying to read currency capitalism. Okay, a plutocracy is where we low people with money to donate or governments to get their needs and desires met, and they become the owners of what we think is democracy. Currently, capitalism has allowed, I'm reading a comment, this to happen by Victoria. Hi, Victoria. And then Ellie Tom. Hi, Ellie Tom. I got a wave. Ellie Tom is in India walking around barefoot, being grounding to the earth. So resisting, how do we resist the marketing of disease and drugs? Well, one way, my brother Ellie Tom Elamine is out in nature all of the time. And that's one of the primary ways that we can begin to reprogram our bodies, that we don't need a drug to feel better. Ellie Tom Elamine has been sharing his breatharian lifestyle and teaching others how to eat less, right, and move more. And that's the key to resisting the marketing of Krispy Kreme donuts, because if you're eating less, donuts are not on the list. Right? If you're eating less, what's on the list are fruits and vegetables, right? When we get down to the holistic menu, what's going to sustain me, what's going to heal me, what's going to help me get better, then what's going to help me and sustain me is fresh vegetables and fruit and pure water, and then a lot of meditation in nature. That's what I think Ellie Tom Elamine is teaching most of the time. He's out there on the beach doing Tai Chi, doing Qigong, and that's what's going to help us resist the marketing of Krispy Kreme donuts. So So unless you're a real addict and you really have no knowledge of what's going on in our society, then you're going to pass up on the Krispy Kreme donuts, right? But there are so many people, this is what concerns me, so many people don't know what Russell Brand has just shared. I'm going to play that one more time because there's so much in there. In case you missed it, there's so much in that production he put together about Johnson & Johnson, for one, drug companies, and how they started, they really promoted this opiate addiction, and now they're the companies people are trusting to inject them with chemicals that are going to help them overcome an invisible virus. It's just, it's worth playing one more time because what's in this audio is just the most important information you need to resist the lies, the deceit, the corruption that all these drug companies have had in lawsuits. And so we're going to listen to Russell one more time so we can, let me see. I don't see. He's not coming on. Okay, I don't think I can play it one more time. But in the meantime, I want to just continue with how do we resist the marketing? And one of the ways we resist the marketing is educating ourselves. So I have some really good educational viruses and 5G because people are more concerned about the viruses and 5G. There's really a lot of fear about 5G and viruses. Let me go to a caller before I go to that audio, but I want us to be fully educated and informed about the things that marketing is telling us we should be afraid of. And if we can just inform ourselves, educate ourselves about the things that the establishment and the government and these health experts are trying to convince us we should be afraid of, then that's how we resist. We resist with knowledge. We resist with wisdom. And we resist by taking a stand in prayer and meditation that wisdom can help us overcome anything. So 312-849, I believe that's Naima Latif. Your mic is open.
Yes.
Grand Rising.
You know, this Tuesday, we were talking on Jody's show about the brain and how it gets rewired and just looking at what happens when a person gets addicted, you know, and I'm sitting here trying not to feel guilty because I just, you know, had cookies for breakfast, you know.
That's okay.
But, you know, but what happens is there are normal things, like you just mentioned, going for walks in the park and nature and all those things that would normally produce a calm kind of euphoric effect. But when you don't have those things and there is stress in your life, then you look for ways to relieve the stress. And your brain is actually wired to respond to those natural things. But when you don't have them and you become stressed and then you get something else such as, you know, a donut or in my case, a cookie, you can get to the point where you rely on those substances to create the natural euphoria, the dopamine and all of the hormones that create calmness. And so when you do that, it rewires your brain so that your brain then responds to those things as opposed to the normal things. So when people, you know, when their children are crying, ah, shut that baby, give them a sucker, or, you know, give them a piece of candy, or, you know, give them a cookie, you're actually rewiring their brain and creating the addictive brain, because then rather than them having the normal things like you calming them down by singing to them, rocking them, and causing their brain circuits to stay wired the way they are normally wired to produce the calmness that you need, your brain gets rewired to respond to the outside substance that you have used to relieve stress. So it really is a brain function. And a lot of times people feel guilty if you say, oh, you're addicted to this, you're addicted to that, you're addicted to alcohol, you're addicted to sugar. But you got to realize you have rewired your brain to respond to the thing that you have become accustomed to use to make yourself feel better, because you didn't have access or didn't get taught how to use things like meditation, calming music, a walk in nature. You didn't have access to those things that would have kept your brain normally wired to produce internally those hormones that calm you. So now you need the sugar, you need the caffeine, you need the alcohol, you need the thing that you've wired your brain to respond to. And so that's why it's so challenging to overcome an addiction, because you literally have to rewire your brain. You have to change the addiction. You have to go through the process of getting it to respond to the natural things in your environment again before it will produce the dopamine. It will produce what you need to calm yourself, the hormones that are naturally present to give us the natural euphoria. And this, then depending on how long you've had your addiction, it could take a long time to rewire your brain and undo the addiction, because we know it is physical. You can have withdrawal symptoms if you try to go cold turkey. Like you say, oh, I cannot eat any more sugar, no more cake, no more donuts. You will experience those symptoms like withdrawal, the depression, response, the physical uncomfortable feeling, and you know, things like opioids, you know, are highly addictive, but we don't know that sugar is even more addictive. And you can be addicted and not know that you're addicted. You just know that you feel bad until you get a piece of chocolate and you feel better, or you feel bad until you get a donut and you feel better. So you just go and do that because it's not illegal. So there are more people addicted to sugar than anything else, but that means that you have rewired your brain. So now you have to rewire it back to the way it should be by really going through the process of slowly detoxifying yourself, letting go of the addiction, and slowly rewiring your brain to respond to those natural things. It's like a person going through withdrawal, going through the detox of a drug. You have to methodically change the wiring in your brain to respond to something else.
So thank you, Naima. That's exactly the challenge that is before us, is how do we resist the marketing when our emotions are telling us, I need a dopamine fix. I need a serotonin. I need a fix. Something's not right. My emotions are off. I'm feeling depressed. You know, and I've talked about many times on here about birthday parties, how we were programmed as children to love sugar and connect the sugar, the cake, with happy times. You know, birthday parties from the time we were children equated to, related to memories with happy, happy, happy times. And what do every birthday party has sugar and cake in the form of cake and ice cream and candy. You know, I mentioned in my 30s how I woke up to the fact that I needed to change my diet because I was sick. I couldn't get out of bed. My energy went away. And I started feeding my children sugarless food. Though you can imagine how well that went over. At birthday parties, I made my own cakes. I made my own cakes for birthdays. And at Halloween, I was giving out raisins. I was giving out boxes of raisins at Halloween. And my children were so embarrassed.
You had a reputation.
Yes.
Children avoided your house. That's a raisin lady.
They would just go hide in their room because, oh, Lord, mom's giving out raisins. My friends are going to be so embarrassed. I didn't care. I was just convinced I wasn't going to be feeding my kids sugar. And their dad and I were, of course, in conflict about that because he felt like we should give them all the sugar they want. And so now both of my sons are almost sugar addicts because I withheld the sugar from them. But what it did was strengthen their immune systems, because what happened is they have very strong immune systems. And when they do get a cold or something, they get over it really quickly because I was the one giving them the herbs and the products to help them get over their colds and things, not from doctors so much, but from my herbal cabinet. So with children now, oh my goodness, my poor grandson, he's looking more like an addict because he's got to have his Poleta, his popsicle, and he wants his candy, and dad gives them cupcakes, and dad just gives them whatever they want because their mother believes that sugar is food and you should just give them. And mom is always, their mother was always, I would come over to my son's house and his wife would have a whole box of Krispy Kremes, honey. It was like nothing, especially when her sister came to visit, that was their treat. They'd get a whole box of donuts and feast on the donuts. And so now she believes her children should have the same freedom to eat as much sugar as they want.
This is what I would recommend so that you don't get stressed about it.
Because
you know they come to see you and things like that. Just provide as much balance as you can. Feeding them spinach and all of and connect the vegetables that you're giving them with something fun that you do with them. You know, have a picnic with a bowl of spinach. I mean, whatever, you know. But, you know, find ways to help their brain get rewired back to responding to the natural things and the association with the healthy food and something fun. And, you know, have them take them out for walks in nature, runs in the park, and then give them some healthy food as you're doing it. And, you know, play the relaxing music and do something fun, play a nice game. I mean, keep, you know, helping to rewire their brain. Don't fuss about the sugar, because that's create stress, and then they get more sugar to let go of the stress that you caused by fussing. So don't even acknowledge what other people are doing. Just do the other thing and connect what you do with something fun that they like, to create a balance so that their brains are able to respond to the natural things and they're able to calm themselves down. But don't make it a stressful thing when they eat the sugar. Don't fuss at the parents, you know, because all of those things become stresses that then they have to do something to get rid of that stress. So just,
have
fun when it comes to natural fun.
Well, that's exactly what I've learned to do. Thank you, Naeem. I've learned to just accept. When I'm there, I'm only there every 2 weeks. I see my grandchildren maybe every 2 weeks because they're with their dad every other week and sometimes a little more. But every 2 weeks, I really don't stress about it anymore. My son knows that what my beliefs are, and he's chosen to do something different. And so when they're with me, for instance, we went roller skating. And usually the first time we were at roller skating, dad was buying them hot dogs and all this junk food and paletas again. And I said, okay, next time I go roller skating with them, grandma's taking a bag of healthy snacks, which I did. And this last time I took apples, and I actually cut up the apple. I took them to the little cafe area or a restaurant area, and I brought out my apples, cut them up, and my grandchildren and I sat there and ate apples together. And so you're right.
Yeah.
They associated that fun time of roller skating with grandma and apples. And I said, this is the memory that I want them to have. When you're with grandma,
right. You're
going to have healthy snacks. When you're not with grandma, you do whatever you want. I'm not going to fight and fuss about it. And I'm going to be there to hold your hand if you get sick. They did an experiment with children. They did an experiment with children. I heard this the other day on a Facebook post, actually a video, YouTube. They spread out a table with vegetables and fruits and then candy on the end of the table. And they let the children choose whatever food they wanted. Of course, the children went to the end of the table and they were eating the candy. And they did this for like 2 or 3 days, I think. And eventually the children got sick. And so the children finally decided that they were going to try some vegetables and fruit this time I think the fourth day or so. they realized they had to let the children choose their poison, if you will. And then at once they got sick, they realized the consequences. Then they let them choose again, and they began to choose healthier foods. The problem with that, of course, is that sometimes they don't get sick. And if they don't get sick, they think eating candy and all that sugar is okay. And then when they do have a problem like diabetes, that's what the issue is with these audios that I was going to play for you, is the confessions of a sugar addict is that it's not until their adult life that they develop the disease. And that's why it becomes important for us to help the children, educate the children on what's really healthy for them, so that they can indeed begin to make those choices and maybe let them get sick off the candy, Halloween candy. That's always the time where kids get the flu and they get sick. But there has to be a balance when we are talking about our children, our grandchildren, on what's too much if you have those children with you. I don't have them with me every day, even every week. So you're right. It has to be, we shouldn't be stressed out about what our children are feeding their our grandchildren, because there's no control over that. But we can educate one another on the drug company's role in causing disease, and then try and teach people about the marketing plan that these drug companies have is always to produce disease, because that helps them make more money. That's like the bottom.
Even when you educate people, sometimes people choose not to care and they just want to feel better. And you can tell them all the information and give them all the facts and the bottom line. Just like if you talk to a drug addict, somebody on heroin, you know, you can say, oh, it's bad for you, and you're going to ruin your life. All of that, but their bottom line is, I just want to feel better. And so they choose to just ignore all that and just focus on feeling better. So, you know, all we can do is give people the information, but until they're ready to receive it, until they are ready to make a change for themselves, keep doing what they're doing. So our best thing we can do is not allow it to create internal stress if they don't respond to clear information that is showing them that they're making choices that are going to hurt them. Because we all have free will, you know. And children, ultimately, they just want to be happy, you know. So if being with grandma, they're happy, and they're happy with apples, and being with mom and dad, they're happy with donuts. But, you know, they just want to be happy. And, you know, they'll get to a point where either an adolescent says, well, I don't like these pimples, let me stop eating this sugar, you know, because it'll be for their own reason. They'll decide to follow the helping, but you will have given them the information, so at least they know what to do when they decide they want to change the body chemistry that is, you know, maybe having an adverse reaction when they go through adolescence. So, I mean, you're doing the job. You're planting the seeds. You're laying the foundation. You're giving them the knowledge and understanding and the good experiences. And then, you know, they'll get to a point where they make that choice on their own for the reasons that benefit themselves. Yeah.
So there's an audio I want to play about Dr. Fauci and Corona that from 2017. There are still people who have a lot of respect for this man, and they don't believe even that this is a plandemic. And so this is a little bit more information about the deceptive marketing of, you know, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They market that all the time to organizations, to people, to try and convince people that Bill and Melinda only have your best in mind. They're looking out for your well-being. But when you look at what Dr. Fauci's been involved in and this whole corona, it pays to know the history of some of these people. So here's a little bit of history on the corona and Dr. Fauci.
I'm Ann Rancourt from the National Institutes of Health, and I'm here with my colleague, Dr. Anthony Fauci, Director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Dr. Fauci, thanks for joining me.
Good to be with you.
We're at the U.S. Conference on AIDS here in Washington, D.C., and Dr. Fauci, you just gave a plenary address where you talked a little bit about the individual and the global HIV pandemic. Tell us a little bit about what you said today.
Well, the point I wanted to make to the audience is that I have for a number of years now, the last three or four in particular, talking about ending the HIV/AIDS pandemic as a pandemic, as a epidemiological global health phenomenon. And I wanted to make sure that the audience understood that there are two components to that. There's how you deal with the individual person who's living with HIV or at risk for HIV, the tools we have and what it means to them, versus the broader perspective of how you can turn around and hopefully end the global pandemic as an epidemiological phenomenon. So even though those two intertwine and relate to each other, there are two separate components of it. And those components have different challenges. And one of the challenges that we spoke about is how do you actually implement the tools that you have to end the epidemic as a true epidemic at the same time as you get to the individual person the things they need to either live better lives while infected or to prevent them from getting infected when they're at risk.
And one of the areas where those tools interdigitate is treatment as prevention, sure. Or as you described it, U equals U. Tell us
right.
about that.
Well, you know, we have something now over the last several years that is an extraordinary phenomenon in HIV treatment and prevention, and that is the realization, and it's unique to HIV because there really are no other viral diseases that are chronic and transmissible for years over a period of time. I mean, this is a very unique situation. So what we've been able to show by not only well-controlled studies, but by cohort observational studies, that if you treat a person who's HIV infected and bring down the viral load to below detectable level, you've essentially eliminated the likelihood that that person is going to transmit their infection to an uninfected sexual partner.
Now, that was Dr. Fauci several years ago talking about HIV. He's one of the people we should be resisting the marketing tools of Fauci, because what happened with Dr. Fauci is he promoted the drug AZT. So he marketed, you may remember, and there's a great movie about that, the Dallas movie. And he promoted AZT as the solution for AIDS and HIV, and people were dying from that drug. And the Dallas Buyers Club was the name of the movie with Tim McConaughey, something like that. Dallas Buyers Club is a great movie that outlines what happened with AZT, how people were dying. And Dr. Fauci was one of those people promoting AZT. And no one was resisting it, or not very many were resisting it, because it was promoted as the solution to HIV and AIDS, and people were dying in the thousands. So here we are in 2021, and we still got this character Fauci promoting the vaccine as the solution for the pandemic. So again, the way to resist the marketing today is to know history. And that's what I'm going to play. We have a few people who just joined us. I'm going to play a little bit of Russell Brand again before we go, because he gives you the history of Johnson & Johnson in particular and how they promoted opiate production. And we've had 400,000 people who have died because of the opiate crisis. Let me go to the phones real quick, and then we'll come back to Russell Brand. 312-671, your mic is open. Give us your name, where you're calling from.
Yes. Good morning, Grand Rising, Dr. V. This is Minister Plump, Robert
Good
Claude
morning.
Plump.
You found us over here on Soul Purpose Healing, huh?
Yes, because, you know, our health is our wealth, and I'm so glad that you're continuing to promote that to the community at large. You know, that's something that I'm very much concerned with because of my condition and experience with prostate cancer and glaucoma and high blood pressure. You know, my health got to be my wealth. And I wanted to share that thought with you, especially in the radio audience. I think you may have met, or if not, you need to meet Dr. Julius Thomas Nettles Bay. He'd be teaching at National Black Wall Street every Tuesday. and he teaches them a naturopathy or chiropractor or in natural products, you know. And he has about 600 products all concerning natural healing. And I know that you're into that, and I wanted to commend you on that and invite all of the people in Chicago. This Tuesday, we're going to be with Dr. Julius Thomas Nettles Bay in Chicago with National Black Wall Street Chicago. And that's going to be at 4655 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Drive, room 203. And for more information, brothers and sisters or people in like-minded consciousness can go to the Harold Washington Foundation .net or call me for jobs or businesses to establish or help to people to establish at 312-671-2773. And it's an honor and a privilege and a lesson and a blessing to be with you on this land today. So thank you for all you do. We love you, and keep up the good work. And
yes.
What time are you on Sundays?
Sunday
I think you say you got a
problem. Sunday evening at 8. Thank you, Minister Plum, for joining us tonight. I hope you'll join us on Sunday evening for Soul Purpose Healing. This is Health and Well-Being with Beata today, and we were talking about resisting the market. Now, what Minister Plump is doing is awesome on a local level. That's what we have to do. And that's the resisting the marketing of disease and drugs involves having a local program, a community program. Because as I read, there's censorship going on the large scale of promoters of health and well-being, like Mercola and Tai and Charlene Bollinger. There's a lot of censorship going on. So when you're doing what Minister Plump is doing, that's where we're going to have, I think, more success when we can concentrate on the local level and not try and be on such a big platform so much. Because if you're going to promote health and well-being with vitamins and supplements and meditation, then you're going to be attacked, is what I'm finding. You bring out the truth of natural remedies, and there are people waiting in the wings to say you're an anti-vaxxer or you are not a legitimate medical source. So be careful. And that's what we do. On a local level, they're not going to be concerned about it. But on a larger scale, we have to be careful about what we're promoting. So I open up the mic, 407-797. Your mic is open.
God bless you. Great rising, great consciousness, great like-minded people. This is such vital information. So this is just a remark for the good of the order, just to thank you for your vitality, your research, your study, your commitment, and your love for Black people. But I'll tell you something. You've caused me to really, really pause this morning because, you know, I know that the medical professionals and the pharmacological, czars, they know that sugar kills you. They know that the food that they're feeding us. I saw an Instagram yesterday that said, don't buy any food that is advertised on TV. I mean, they know that this food kills us. They know that this causes our medical problems. It knows that it causes our misery. But they do it strictly for profiteering.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but I mean, but that's just so hard. I mean, that makes the Scottsboro Boys and the Tuskegee experiments and all of those things just make so much sense, because you got this mad scientist, this crazed lower than whale vomit son of a cockroach out here that's creating the food that we eat to kill us. I mean, Gary, you think about that for a moment.
Yes, okay. I think about it a lot. In fact, you know, that's how that you know what you're saying, Jonathan, is that pharmaceutical, big pharma, medical mafia, call them, have a worldwide influence. The pharmaceutical companies have a worldwide influence, and that's what you're mentioning, is that these people don't care. They know sugar is not good for the health. And yet they promote it in strange ways. And in the drugs, they know that there are side effects. But if there's no disease, they go out of business. So we know that Big Pharma is doing what they do all for money, all for profit. It's not about saving us or for our welfare or helping us heal any. They're not going to heal anything with these drugs. They want to keep staying in business. So what you're saying is that the motive is clear to most of us that they want to stay in business and keep us sick and diseased and weak. So how do you resist? You educate yourself. And I think you have to practice emotional healing, because as Naima pointed out and I'm pointing out, when a person is emotionally up and down, then they're going to reach for a dopamine effect or something to get them high, whether it's food or some drug. And so if you don't work on the emotional roller coaster that we are all on sometimes, then you're going to be thinking about how can I get a quick fix? And usually it's not with broccoli or peas or a salad. The quick fix is usually with alcohol or sugar, candy bars, right? We keep some candy bars stuck in there in case our blood sugar drops. Why does our blood sugar drop? The blood sugar drops because there's an emotional element at play. In fact, I was going to see Louise Hayes has something to say about blood sugar. I believe blood sugar, blood problems is lack of joy. Lack of joy, blood problems, lack of circulation of ideas. So when we look at why people are reaching for candy, sugar, or drugs, it's because the joy is lacking. So
I also extend that to religion, because basically it's just an opiate. People go to church and they get a fix. That's what they get. But they leave, their money, and they leave their independence, and they leave their individuality, and they become what they call sheep. I know people that won't even go to the bathroom unless they ask their pastor's permission. I mean, this is just crazy.
Yes, because they have, you're so right. They have a relationship with someone who feeds them the gospel, or they feed them something that soothes their emotions. And so when you're going,
it's a drug.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. So we've got religion is one of those drugs. The marketing of religion, we could put that in resisting the marketing of religion. If you have to keep going back and forth, back to that same drug and looking for a fix, then maybe there's something else you need to look at deeper that needs fixing other than needing to go to the altar and call Jesus as your savior again and again and again. Because you're right, that intimacy with the altar and your pastor, if it's not fixing the problem, then there's something deeper going on. And we want to help
people. I'm fixing the problem because they want you to come back every week to get more treatment. It's just like the medical mafia. They don't want to cure you. They want to manage your medical condition so that you have to keep taking their drugs and you have to keep coming back to visit them and pay them. It's all the same thing, Vayata.
Well, and Jonathan says, I was looking at my notes. We need to restore spiritual resiliency to America. That was something I heard in a talk that was given recently. Restoring spiritual resiliency to America. Jonathan was on my show on Sunday, and we were talking about how Essence magazine is now lacking that spiritual energy that it used to have in the magazine. And so one of the things that to help us resist the marketing of disease and drugs is we've got to restore spiritual element in our lifestyle, in our journey. So Jonathan, what do you think are some of the things people can do to restore that spiritual, even looking at magazine production, how can we get back to a more spiritual message to the communities and to the world even, rather than this got to have a drug, got to have an algorithm, got to have a fix for this and the that.
It's interesting that you mentioned algorithm, because they have also noticed that, you know, spending time on Facebook and, you know, in the digital media palm space, that, you know, those interactives release the same kind of dopamine and the same kind of, body adjustments that is done with other drugs, you know. So, you know, that is also now becoming a drug. People are spending an average of 6 to 8 hours a day on these things.
So,
you know, we have just gotten away from our natural connection to Mother Earth. And I say that very, very, very emphatically. Mother Earth. Everything that we need is already here. You must understand that this incredible universe that we call our bodies, where we have these trillions of interactions that take place every nanosecond, and they all do it in perfect harmony. This whole planet, everything in it, it has been made perfectly, and all we need, all of our sustenance, really should come from the air we breathe, from the beauty that we see, from the flower that grows, people see me walking down the street. I'm walking on the grass median as opposed to the sidewalk, because I know that if I connect my vibration to the natural earth as opposed to a sidewalk, that it helps my center. I mean, it helps me to be spiritually more awake, more alive, and so. I mean, Vyatta, you're preaching to the choir. You know this, because I mean, you know exactly what we need to do, and what you've been preaching all morning. We need to go back to nature. We need to come back home to God. That's what we need to do.
And even yes, back to our Creator, because the resistance comes when we're confused, like most of this society is so confused, they're standing in line for a drug injection. That's the confusion and the division. And then those of us who are saying, why are you doing that? What's the matter with you? They don't have the clue that these drug companies have contributed to opiate overdoses, and they don't have the knowledge or the information. Yeah, so most of the people who listen to this show are, you're right, we're talking to the choir. But those of who are maybe new on Facebook understand that what we are trying to do is be the goddess warriors and the god warriors, if you will, or the creator warriors, to stand firm, shining our light, bringing forth a light of truth from this kingdom within. And that's the resistance that we are responsible for as we navigate this battle that we're in, where people are totally confused, totally unconscious about lining up to put an injection of drugs in their body. And here's the other thing that many of you may not know, that this vaccine was patented. This so-called injection was patented. And the only way you can patent a drug is it has to be a synthetic. So what's being injected into people's bodies is a synthetic element, partly aborted fetal tissue cells are in there. Some of the debate is that, well, no, they're not actually the cells. They were cloned and they weren't taken out of the baby, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, actually, everything that's in that injection, in that needle, is synthetic. That's the only way they can have a patent on it. So people are lining up to put a synthetic element in their body and hoping it's going to save them from an invisible virus that's already in their body. So the deception is deep. The confusion is deep. The division is deep. And like Jonathan is saying, we got to get back to nature, and we have to stand firm and shine our light of truth, which is this body, this physical body is the truth that cannot be denied, how the digestion works, how our eyes blink, how our hair, everything functions according to a divine plan, and that we are the ones who are here for this time to help people wake up. So those of you who have the mind of the warrior, we need to just be on assignment 24/7.
Vyatta, you just touched on something that is really resonating with me. I don't recall anybody breaking down what's in these injections. I don't remember anybody telling us what the chemical compound elements of this stuff is made of. I mean, and what the process was that they were able to, within 12 months, to be able to authenticate that it's safe and that it has no deleterious, debilitating long-term effects. I don't remember anybody even talking about this.
Well, the marketing plan is to keep us ignorant. That's why we have to resist their marketing plan, because it keeps you ignorant. I was at a Publix grocery store, and they had a table set up by the door for vaccinations, if you wanted a vaccine. And so I went over and said, well, do you have a list of the ingredients? And she said, just a minute. She went back to the pharmacy department and came back and said, no, I'm sorry, we don't have a list of the ingredients. Now, how many people do you think are going to have that injection without a lot of them, because they're running, they're standing in line. They don't care about what's in it. They just think you can trust it because it says vaccines. And someone even on Facebook said, well, we've given our children all these vaccines all these years, so they must be safe. I'm like, what? How many side effects do you think your children are dealing with? All this autism that has arisen, and you're going to trust them putting, and you don't even want to know what is in the injection. I could tell this woman was totally shocked that I asked for a list of the ingredients. She said, well, she was stumbling, and I don't know. Let me go ask the pharmacist. So obviously, no one had brought that up. And it's something that we all should be asking that question, because then you might change your mind when you know. In fact, the archdiocese, this is kind of a joke. The archdiocese has said, well, certain vaccines have more fetal tissue in them than others. So the ones with the least amount of aborted fetal tissues are okay to take. But those like Johnson & Johnson, I think, they have more aborted fetal tissue, so you shouldn't take those. But they're actually recommending that the ones with less fetal tissue particles in them can be injected. So the insanity is really there, rampant. It's like craziness, but resisting all of this means asking for ingredients list, whatever drug it is, and then asking yourself, can I just go out in nature and overcome this imbalance in my body rather than injecting myself with some chemicals that I have no idea how I'm going to react from them. And that's the truth, that everyone's body is different. And as we've all seen, some people are dying after 2 days. Some people it takes 18 days, as the case of the baseball player. And then there are some like Jesse Jackson ended up in the hospital with gallbladder surgery. Now, of course, there's no connection to the injection, but we can conclude that if you had the injection and your health deteriorates, that it might have had something to do with that. And then the fact that drugs are in numerous types of drugs like sugar, and all the other foods, chemicals that are in food preservatives, GMO foods, there's all kinds of ways that the body can be compromised so that you develop a disease when you really never intended to. So this is what we're talking about today, resisting the marketing of disease and drugs. So if you have any comments, I see Annette. Hi, Annette and Jonathan. Thank you all for jumping over here on Soul Purpose Healing. And apologize for the confusion on Female Solution. Don't know what happened, other than I may have scheduled the show for less than 15 minutes, I guess. But thank you for joining me today. If you don't have any other comments or questions, we're at the end of our show on Soul Purpose Healing. And we will come back on Sunday evening. And tomorrow, tomorrow is the 4th Saturday, and we have Mama D on. Mama D tomorrow, do you know her topic tomorrow?
Yes, well, she's talking about hijacking our history, specifically as it comes as its regard to the Negro League. You know, you may remember the team that won the national championship, the young African American team that won the championship and made everybody so proud, and then suddenly it was stripped from them. We're going to talk about that whole issue of removing people from their rightful place in history.
Right.
And how we can restore that. So we'll talk about that tomorrow, and hopefully have some of those people from the old league to be able to talk about it.
Okay, so join us on Female Solution tomorrow. We do. I thought I had less time, but I do have a little bit more time. So I want to play Russell Brand, a little bit more Russell Brand for those of you who just joined us. This excellent and really amazing production Russell Brand put together really puts it in the perspective why we have to resist the marketing of these big pharmaceutical companies who have been killing people with opiates for all these years, and now they want us to trust them. So I'm going to play a little bit of Russell Brand before we go. We've got about 12 more minutes, and I don't have commercials in my studio, so I'm going to just let you hear a little bit of Russell Brand, this excellent, excellent production on how these drug companies have fooled us into thinking we can trust them even though they kill people with opiates.
Did you know that the transnational global mega companies that are creating the vaccine for COVID also created the drugs that led to an opioid epidemic, killing as many people in America as have died as a result of coronavirus? Let's have a look at the opioid crisis and the pharmaceutical industry in general.
Health officials are warning of something called syndemic, two epidemics happening at once.
Of course, we know about the coronavirus pandemic, but the opioid crisis is also on track to claim an unprecedented number of lives.
A new study indicates that the opioid crisis in the U.S. is deepening, with overdoses 29% higher than before the pandemic. According to the latest research based on 190 million emergency department visits, the opioid epidemic is growing in strength and taking advantage of a society now more susceptible to addiction than ever.
The American Medical Association says at least 30 states have reported overdose deaths rising in 2020.
More than 400,000 Americans are estimated to have died during the opioid epidemic that spanned the last couple of decades. How did it start, and which transnational pharmaceutical companies participated in the creation and proliferation of the drugs that caused it?
A judge in Oklahoma ordering Johnson & Johnson to pay $572 million for aggressively marketing addictive painkillers to doctors and to patients.
The thing is with addictive substances, you don't need to aggressively market them. Just put them down. They'll find their market.
This Oklahoma judge has decided that corporate giant Johnson & Johnson helped fuel opioid addictions in his state.
What? Johnson & Johnson? No more tears? Baby product? Good old Johnson & Johnson?
The state blamed Johnson & Johnson for misleading marketing to doctors and patients, but the state says downplayed the risks.
Johnson & Johnson were accused of a cunning, cynical, and deceitful scheme. That's the worst kind of scheme that anyone can come up with. So this cunning and cynical, deceitful scheme was to ramp up narcotic painkiller sales as one of a web of firms that created the biggest drug epidemic in American history. As profits surged, the companies worked in step to change medical culture and practice by influencing doctors, researchers, federal regulators, and politicians. The $572 million fine was well below what some investors and analysts feared in what had been a $17 billion lawsuit. The firm's shares rose by 5% in extended trading following the decision. So the result of that fine was the share price rose probably sufficiently to accommodate that kind of loss. So I guess what this indicates is that we're creating systems that are going to lead to malpractice. They're going to lead to negative consequences. Take the opioid crisis as an example, even though it's serious enough if it were an anomaly. It shows that the incentive for profit is so strong that it overrides all other considerations, like whether or not the drugs are so addictive that it kills people.
COVID-19 is here. It will be here for some time, but in a year or two, it's the opioid use disorder epidemic that'll still be with us.
I suppose because the opioid epidemic indicates a great deal of social dissatisfaction, breakdown of community, breakdown of mental health, loss of hope, alienation. It's a much clearer marker of the problems America faces than the pandemic, which is a peculiar anomaly, the opioid crisis. You can trace its roots, you can trace its creation, not only to certain medical conditions, but to social conditions, to economic conditions, to corporate conditions, and the way that the culture is run.
48 states and more than 2,000 local and tribal governments have now sued drug makers.
In terms of legal consequences for these companies that are charged with such significant jobs, the Johnson & Johnson case was followed by another wave of revelations which brought into focus how other pharmaceutical firms rushed in to exploit what grew into an $8 billion a year industry, showing that a raft of corporations flooded the country with more than 75 billion opioid pills in just 6 years and targeted regions already worst hit by the epidemic. Because I suppose if you're approaching it from a marketing perspective, those areas are where there's a market rather than, oh God, there's a terrible crisis there. What is regarded as a crisis for some is an opportunity for others. And as long as that is the prevailing mentality, these kind of problems will be perpetuated.
We should point out that there are at least two other pharmaceutical companies that have settled with the state of Oklahoma for millions upon millions of dollars. All of them face multiple lawsuits across the country.
They made false claims for the safety of the drugs, not least in manipulating scientific papers to promote the spurious assertions that there was a less than 1% risk of addiction from narcotic painkillers. The manufacturers funded academic studies that hewed their way and doctor training that emphasized opioids as the default treatment for pain. When money is invested on skewing studies and papers, you create the conditions for cynicism and suspicion in other areas of medicine, because you can literally point to these events and say, well, look, when it came to the opioids, they were able to manipulate the evidence. They were able to just pay manageable fines and see their share prices surge back to values that meant it could easily be accommodated. How can we trust them? How can we trust these companies? How can we trust this mentality?
Janssen Pharmaceuticals told CBS News in a statement that the state's allegations are baseless and unsubstantiated. We acted responsibly in providing FDA-approved pain medications, the company said.
Much of the influence they asserted was done through lobbying and the funding of medical societies. The industry provides much of the FDA's income through the fees it pays for drug approvals. Therefore, the FDA is to a degree funded by the pharmaceutical companies that it's supposed to regulate, which obviously represents a conflict of interest. This is what I mean by systemic corruption.
Johnson & Johnson points out that the FDA-approved labels of these medicines provide clear information about their risks and benefits.
What's the point of having a regulatory body that doesn't regulate practices that are this nefarious? That requires significant change. Whether you have a Democratic government or a Republican government is not going to affect that entire area of political and social life. So in that regard, at least, it means that the political process is redundant or irrelevant.
Johnson & Johnson set to deliver 4 million doses of its vaccine this week.
This week, Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine was authorized by the FDA.
The FDA's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices recommending the vaccine for people 18 and older.
A report from Global Justice Now looked at the track record of 7 corporations hoping to produce vaccines. 6 of these giants made a combined revenue of $266 billion last year, with profits of $46 billion.
Johnson & Johnson is going to be a game changer.
For many of the corporations researching COVID vaccines, the virus has created an opportunity which cannot only be measured in soaring share price or anticipated profits. Rather, they're looking for the virus to rejuvenate the public image of this most unloved of business sectors. The problem is that...
So I'm going to end it there. We're almost done for the day. The question he asked was interesting. How, where there's a market... That's where these marketing schemes focus. So it's obvious to me, and I hope you as well, that there's an ignorant public. That's the market for drugs and disease. People are ignorant. They have no knowledge about their bodies. They have very little knowledge about viruses, what viruses are, what they do. And then they have very little knowledge about the corruption and the nefarious activities of companies like Johnson & Johnson. So as he said, where there's a market, they're going to target, and then we have a large population of people who are totally ignorant about the criminal activity of these drug companies. So that's what we warriors are up against. warriors of truth and light. We have to shine our light regardless and bring about an awareness in ourselves, first of all, and then hopefully it will spread throughout the globe. And that's what our goal is, our focus. Resist, resist, resist. Be the warrior you came here to be. And that is promoting the light of truth that comes from within. That's the what people are missing lining up for an injection. Your healing comes from within. And you don't need a lot of supplements and herbs and all that to heal, but you do need to be in nature, as our caller pointed out. And we continue to point out on health and well-being with Beata. So thank you for joining me this morning. I hope you'll share this with your friends, because, and you can also listen to that full Russell Brand YouTube on how vaccine makers cause the opiate crisis. That's the name of it. How vaccine makers cause the opiate crisis. It's worth listening to. I posted it on my Facebook page, and already I've had someone who is going through a lot of pain right now because her child overdosed on opiates. And she was thankful that I posted that Russell Brand YouTube. But I said, no, thank us, because we share our painful experiences with others, whether it's the death of a child through opiate addiction, overdose, or whether it's the death of our friends from these vaccines, and deaths from hard cardiovascular disease. People died in 2019. Number one death cause was cardiovascular disease in 2019. I believe that's still the number one cause of death, but we're being bamboozled to think that it's all about a virus. So let us share the truth. Let's continue to love, be loving and compassionate and patient with all those who are still wandering around, taking advantage of the drugs and having disease come up in their bodies. We can have compassion, love, and wisdom no matter what. So I am going to go out with Awaken, my favorite artist. Awaken. It's time for all of us to awaken. And Damian Escobar will take us out for the next minute. Thank you for joining us.